Today's episode of Does Not Compute is brought to you by Rollbar. Anyone who's worked on a production app knows how much of a pain it can be to deal with errors. But Rollbar solves that by automatically collecting your application's errors. It can alert you when new errors pop up, and even integrates with your source control so you can tie commits to the errors they fix. Rollbar works with all major languages and frameworks, and can be set up to track production errors in just a few minutes. Once you're using Rollbar, you won't have to dig through log files, piles of error emails, or user-reported errors anymore. Rollbar integrates with your existing workflow. You can send error reports to Slack or HipChat and turn errors into issues in your bug tracking software. Rollbar is used and trusted by developers at great companies like Kayak, Twilio, Heroku, Twitch, Zendesk, and more. I personally use Rollbar at NestNotes, and as a solo developer, I can tell you it saved me more than once. Rollbar is running a special offer for Does Not Compute listeners. If you go to rollbar.com/DNC and sign up, you'll get 1 month of their bootstrap plan for free. Rollbar is an awesome, easy way to simplify your life as a developer. Check them out today by visiting rollbar.com/DNC. Sean, you finally got me to do it. You finally got me to pull the trigger on buying Paw.
I'm just living vicariously through your pocketbook.
It is, I guess for anybody who doesn't know, Paw is a Mac HTTP client. It's very similar to things like Postman or Insomnia, if you've heard of either of those. But it is massively, massively full-featured. Oh, man. There's so much cool stuff you can do in Paw.
Yeah, I used Postman briefly, like very briefly. And back when I was working for Octopus, I saw Paw and I knew that I wanted to get more into APIs because I hadn't really done much API work. And it looked nice. So I said, "Hey, Nicole, can we expense this?" And she said, "Okay." So I bought it. And yeah, that's how I started using it. It's been great. I use it a lot, especially for like prototyping stuff. I'll kind of map out in Paw requests how I want things to work, and then I'll start building it out.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's kind of like I'm using it kind of like TDD, I suppose. Like I'll design the stuff in Paw, and then I'll just keep refreshing it till it works.
And when you originally sent me this, I was like, you know what? I already have Postman, and $50 is a lot for sending HTTP requests. You know, I can do that with curl. I'm gonna be doing all this in right. curl and Postman, and it's fine. But Paw is totally worth every last cent. It is really, really cool. You can do stuff like chain requests and pull output of a request and shoot it into the headers mm-hmm. of another request, and just all sorts of amazing stuff. And so, for example, that's really useful if you have an API that you needs to be authed against. Instead of just storing an auth token that can change, you can actually have it fire off a request to your auth endpoint and retrieve that token for you and automatically insert it into future requests. It is killer.
Yeah,
it is
so well done. I had tried Insomnia out briefly, which is, you know, Insomnia is great. It just doesn't have request training yet. And so what I would do is I would log in and then I would copy the JWT token and then I would paste it into an environment variable. But I would have to do that every time. You know, if yeah. I wanted to test something with a different user, I would do it every time, copying, pasting, changing environment variables. And so like you're saying with Paw, you can create environment variables that watch the output of a specific request. So when you're setting it up, it's real easy. You just type into a field and you hit a tab or some character and it comes up with a little UI. You pick the request you want, you pick the actual key from that response, and then it just grabs that and uses it. So what I do is if I'm having like different permission levels of users, I'll just have three different sign-in endpoints, and then I'll just sign in as a person and test something out and sign in as someone else and test something out.
Yeah. What super impressed me, one of many things that really impressed me, was the way that the interface works when you are actually piping the output of a request to another request or to a variable. Is that it goes in and auto completes for you. It actually knows, of course, the output of that request. And so as you're typing in, for example, if you need to dive into some data structure to retrieve a specific thing, as you're typing that in, it actually knows exactly what was returned from the last response and will auto complete all your keys
for
you.
It's
so cool.
Pretty awesome. Another nice little thing that it does is it kind of helps you lint your endpoints. So if you're spitting out like invalid headers or invalid JSON or something like that, it'll actually tell you, it'll ring a little bell and tell you in the output, "Hey, this isn't valid. This is an invalid response or something." So that's kind of it's kind of another level of smokescreen for me. I need lots of help making sure I don't do dumb things. And this is just another tool that I don't have to configure anything. You don't have to be aware that it's going to do it. It just does it, which is super nice.
Yeah, really, really impressive stuff. And I'm already finding just a ton of uses for this outside of just testing my API. I've got a folder in here set up. So I'm primarily using this for my day job for Nest Notes. And I've got a folder in here just called Heroku because I've been productionizing the app lately. We're in private alpha now. And so there's all sorts of moving parts at this point. There's Netlify deploys that needs to be synchronized with Heroku deploys and database migrations and loading new seed data into the database, all that kind of stuff. And I just have a little Heroku folder in PAW. And one of those requests is migrate staging. And it just talks to the Heroku API. It knows my Heroku auth token. And I can just fire off this request to migrate staging at any point. This is very similar to what I was doing with the button. But now I actually have a GUI for all of these things. So I can promote staging, I can seed production, all that kind of stuff. Clear out caches of various URLs. Because I'm using a pre-renderer. So sometimes you need to like kick those over. Just all sorts of little things that now I basically just have this dashboard that allows me to control my whole server setup just from an HTTP client on my desktop.
That's a good idea because I never thought to do that. But in thinking about it, you're saying like there's Heroku pipelines, there's other deploys. And in general, all of those tools that we're using, they all have APIs, you know, but like Heroku, for example, is just a big SPA now in the last update. So it makes sense that you could just, you know, get the information you need together, for example, your token or something, authorize it, and then you basically just have one click updates. So you don't actually have to log into UIs and click around. That I might have to steal that idea from you.
And what's really cool is that all this stuff is super easy to also hook into Slack. So I actually just set up a little wrapper task. So I have, instead of DB migrate, I can run NN migrate. And NN for Nest Notes. And after that runs, it just has DB migrate as a dependency. And then the actual NN migrate task itself, all that does is fire off a message to Slack saying this environment was just migrated or this environment was just seeded. And so as my automatic deploys from pull requests come in, for example, if I'm making an update to my API, I can make a pull request against master in GitHub. It's going to run all my Circle CI stuff. And once that's passing, allow me to merge it in. When it gets merged in, it'll automatically deploy to staging on Heroku. Mm-hmm. And then I can run a command from inside PAW to promote staging to production. And all of that automatically gets notified into Slack in a production channel. So everybody is aware of what's being deployed and when. It's really, really pretty slick. And PAW is allowing me to do a lot of that very easily.
That does sound pretty nice because I have something similar set up, but in terms of like Slack notifications and things like that, but I don't have one for migrations. And also for all of the Slack messages I get, I have to log into a different service and set up an integration one by one. So it sounds like you just have the hooks on your side for whenever something actually runs and then you can just notify yourself.
So I have a couple like built-in hooks. So I'm using the Heroku build hooks add-on for notifications from them. And then Netlify has their own kind of little notification section. So I had to set those ones up separately, but the majority of things like the migration and the seed ones, and I get notifications for new users, all that sort of stuff. I just have like a little setup inside my actual Rails app for sending
that
stuff to Slack
handy.
As well.
I don't know why I never thought to use PAW as a little control center, but that makes a lot of sense. I mean, everything is just APIs anyway, so why not use that in kind of a central location? And I'm sure you just have it like in a different folder, because you can group folders and stuff inside of a PAW workspace. Do you just have that in a different, is it in a different project or altogether, or is it just in a different group within your Nest Notes project?
So I have a single project. It's just the one Nest Notes project. And then there's a folder for Heroku stuff. There's a folder for tools. There's a folder for V1 of my actual API. So it's all split out. And then I actually have two environments set up. I didn't realize this at first, but you can set up multiple environments inside of a single PAW document. So I have one for actually Nest Notes, which has production, staging, and development environment variables. And then I have a meta environment that only has production, because those things aren't really... I just want the one set. Even if something is going to be for staging, I want to define that in the name of the variable, not as an actual environment, if that makes sense.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. So are you using, just curious, are you using the encryption that comes with PAW? Because I know that you can encrypt your projects, especially because you have some production level keys, it sounds like.
Yep, yep. I'm heavily using their encryption stuff. It's super cool, really easy to use. And then I just throw that key in 1Password if I ever need it.
That sounds pretty nice. I might have to I'm going to steal some of those ideas when I get some time. It's been, we say this every week, but it's just, it doesn't seem like things are getting less busy ever.
Things are never getting less busy. Things are getting more busy. It seems.
Yeah, it seems. So we started using Intercom, which is great. I think it's great. They actually have a pilot program for early startups. It's like $50 a month and you can get all of their software. It's like,
so do you have that like already integrated into the site, or is that something you're currently working on?
Nope. I just dropped in. So I dropped in, they have a Rails gem that I just dropped in. And so, cause we have a private beta going on, lots of people are being onboarded, or like stores are being onboarded. And so we don't want to launch until we have a certain number of products and a certain number of stores on the platform. And so as the stores are being onboarded, they're going through the whole process and they're reaching out to me with any questions or bug reports and stuff like that. So it's nice because I try to take a section of my day, and that way I can communicate to people directly. But it's also nice because it helps me feel closer to the users. You know, we talk about empathy being a big thing, and that helps with that a ton. If you're actually talking to the people that are using your application, it helps me a lot. But it's been great. I mean, I'm using it for support documents, so we can write FAQs and just send those to people, and they give you a little like one-off site you can use as well. But through that, I get notified of like new users and things like that. So I don't have anything going to Slack there. But yeah, it's just, you know, between like doing the work and then organizing GitHub issues and actually talking to people using the app, it's like my time is just gone.
Yeah, organizing GitHub issues alone can take up such a huge chunk of time. That's something I've been really, really focusing on as we're gearing up for production, is just making sure that everything gets into GitHub issues. Every little, oh, this might be cool to add at some point, goes into GitHub issues, just on a future milestone. Everything has to go in there. It's so important to have a central store because, man, every single time I forget just how much there is in productionizing an app.
Yeah, there is.
But there's so much. It's never ending. Never ending.
No, it's not. So I'm still working on some foundational stuff, some changes that we wanted to add, some features that we thought we should add before being able to go live. And it's great for that because I can kind of separate stuff out. I just use filters a lot, so I don't see lots of things. I just filter everything I need to see. And that way I'm just not distracted. But you know, this whole last week I was working on shipping. And it was nice because I was able to, you know, take an issue and then just map everything out, make a bunch of different to-do lists in there. That way I'm kind of keeping progress inside of one location, and it's been pretty great. And I turned off email notifications for issues. So I'm not getting pinged when other people are adding them, which at first I was kind of worried about that because, you know, I didn't want things to slip through the crack, but, I think for me and my ability to focus, it's important for me to not get not see those because I'll get distracted by them.
Yeah, that's something I've been kind of dealing with a little bit as well, is like not only not getting distracted by new issues, but not getting intimidated by them.
Yeah.
Because if somebody puts in an issue, it's like, let's rethink this core feature of the app. I mean, that can be if you're waist deep in a horrible bug already and you're like, oh, I need to launch this thing in a few days, and now people are already talking about features that are going to take months to build, then that can be really, really unsettling. And not only does it break your flow, it's just like, it kind of, at least for me, can be really demoralizing. So I really, really like scheduling things for future milestones, just because that kind of reinforces in my mind, at least, that this is not something I need to be worried about or even be thinking about yet.
Yeah, it just helps you with your priorities. And that's something that I struggle with too, because I'm being the one that's responsible for it, all of it, everything in that list, you know, not having it prioritized. Yeah. You know, like a lot of people don't like to dump time into that kind of thing. You know, they think it's a waste of time to have to go through and manage those things by hand. But I think that, you know, being upfront about it and spending time, like being intentional about spending time there, I think will help you more in the long run. And that's what's been helping me. And it's just more of a personal thing, like trying to remind myself, like you said, not everything is to do right now. And I don't have to do everything right now. I just have to make sure that I'm prioritized, and I have to make it clear to myself which ones I'm working on. And that allows me to focus, and that allows me to not feel as stressed out or not feel as buried.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people always worry about spending too much time on organizing stuff, But I don't think that necessarily has to be super heavy. The version of how I'm doing this right now is extremely lightweight. I literally have two milestones. I have an alpha launch milestone, which is stuff that needs to happen before we can launch the alpha officially. And I have a post-alpha launch milestone, which is just everything else. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't really matter. If I want to make that more granular after alpha launch, I can do that. I can split that out into like weeks, or say this needs to be done before beta, this can wait until after beta. However that needs to be structured is fine. What matters for right now is that I know the exact stuff that needs to get done before this next version of the app can go live. And then anything beyond that can be worried about after alpha is launched. I can reorganize that however I want.
Yeah, it's kind of like, maybe some people can identify with this, but you know, as you, like, say you have a car and your car starts to get a little bit dirty, you start to stress out about it a lot. And then as it gets dirtier, it's more stressful. That's how it is to me anyway. I see it and maybe I don't clean it up right away, but I know it's there and it heats at me. That's how I feel about my issues in GitHub. If it's not, you know, I can tell it's starting to kind of roll out of control, and then it takes away from my actual ability to focus. So it's just one of those things where I need to buckle down and just do it. And, you know, we talked about, I don't know even how many weeks now, you know, I said I would mention if my Dropbox paper thing is still going. It is actually, it's still alive and I'm still using it. And that's something that helps me a lot, is just trying to simplify that as much as I can, the to-do setup. So literally I'm just writing, you know, plain text into a paper document and using that. And then between that, like, kind of what I'm doing right now list and the GitHub issues, like big picture what I'm doing now and down the future, I think between those two, I've been able to be pretty productive.
So do you have like a heuristic for deciding what goes on your local list or your paper list and versus what goes into GitHub issues? I'm not totally sure I follow how you're splitting that up.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I mean, so like big features, big changes, for example, like automated shipping estimates and things like that, I'll put that into an issue, and I will, you know, if anything kind of like requires a thought process or documentation on how I'm going to do it, then I kind of make an issue for that. Anything that might require like a checklist for multiple items for the same thing. And so things that go in my Dropbox paper are kind of like, don't forget to do this, or, you know, make sure you have this done today. Or they could be really small things like adjust this CSS padding here, or, you know, it's just small one-off things that I don't think need issues. I try to use the issues for things that have layers to them, if that makes sense.
So I just got an organizations on GitHub set up for Nest Notes, which I'm pretty happy about. And the name was actually originally taken, and this was super cool. I emailed the guy. He had an org set up there, and it hadn't been used in, it seemed like, a few years. And so I emailed the guy and he replied the next morning. He's like, I moved off the name. You can have it. And it was just such a great experience. Yeah, I was not expecting that at all. It was really cool. So I actually got github.com/nestnotes, which I'm really happy about. And now that I got that set up, I just have an issues repository. It's just github.com/nestnotes/issues. And then everything goes in there. And whether it's for the API or for the web client or for other mobile clients in the future, everything goes in that one spot, and then it kind of allows me to use it a lot more as a project management tool than you would normally be able to use GitHub issues as.
Sure.
Because instead of saying, like, add this feature to the API in the API repository, and then saying, expose this feature in the UI in the web client repository, I can just do it in the single place and then mention it from there, which allows me to kind of, like, let's say down the road, if it was more than one person, if it was somebody working on the API and somebody working on the web client, then those people would just be able to split it up and see, kind of see when things are ready to go. So you can see by just looking at that single issue, okay, it's been stubbed out in the UI, it's been fully completed in the API, now it's been fully completed with them talking together. And I'm really liking that flow a lot, especially since I am already set up in a multi-repository kind of way. If it was just a monolith for the entire thing, for the API as well as the front end, then I don't think make nearly as much sense to have a separate issues repository. But because it is split out like this, I'm really feeling like this is kind of a good way to go. I'm digging it a lot so far.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing that too a little bit, and I haven't done it yet, but I think I'm leaning towards that route because I do end up having two tabs with GitHub open, and I do end up always referencing the other the other issues from one repo, and GitHub makes it easy, you know, just typing the repo name slash issue name or number or something like that, it can auto-complete it across repositories. But it might just be nicer, especially for things like Nye Foundation, where he's filing, you know, he's using two different repositories because he's working with the front end and the back end. It could just be easier for him to have one place. And then I really like the idea, like you said, that you can, if you have two different sides, even for me, if it's just me for now, I can kind of tell, okay, API side is done. Now the front end needs to be done. It sounds like a pretty sweet little life hack for GitHub.
Yeah, and since I actually have this one set up as nestnotes/issues, I can just do closes nestnotes issues 5. And it looks really natural. It doesn't look unusual in the commit history. So that's pretty pedantic, honestly, but I'm happy with it.
Sure. I mean, you can, even in the GitHub UI, you can click through stuff because it'll link you to the other repos. So it's not like there's just one repo with random, you know, link to issue number 5 with no link to it. It's pretty easy to get from one place to the other, which I think, you know, it's a pretty nice little feature. I mean, you can do it with issues and pull requests, but anything you want, really, it works pretty well. So I feel like I'll probably end up doing that. I noticed that some people in our Slack channel said that they do the same thing as well, just have a separate issues repo. So I'll probably end up giving it a try.
I think it's a nice setup.
A funny little thing, though, is because you mentioned you emailed that guy and he was like, yeah, you can have it. I switched it over. I was on the reverse end of that a few days ago. So a few months ago, maybe, I made a VS Code Vue plugin just because the only one that was existing had a couple of bugs. So I just made a new one. And then people were just kind of filing some bugs in mine saying, hey, you know, I would like this like autocomplete feature. And to do that with VS Code, you actually have to really dive into the plugin system because you have to use engines that live under the hood. And I didn't have the time and energy to do that. So I just said, sorry. And anyway, so another plugin comes along called Vetur. And that one just knocked it out of the park. You know, it had all the stuff that mine didn't have. And so he emailed me a few days ago and was like, hey, you know, would you want to think about unpublishing your plugin? Because like a lot of people are still installing yours. I think I had like 13,000 or so installs. And he was like, people are filing bugs on my repo for yours because they're getting confused. And he was like, would you want to unpublish it? And I was like, sure. I mean, I'm actually using your plugin. I don't even use the one I made anymore. So I just unpublished it. But I was more than happy to, you know. He came across as like not being kind of bratty about it. He was just like, hey, you know, people are being confused. Would you want to, it doesn't seem like you're maintaining yours. Would you want to close it? And I said, sure.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. It's people get so hung up over names and stuff, but like if there is a clear best option, it should probably have the best name.
I mean, I mean there was no reason for me not to because I don't even use mine. I was using the guy that emailed me. I was using his plugin, so there's no reason for me to keep mine around, so I just took it down. But yeah, if you do use Vue and you use VS Code, check out Vetur. It's pretty nice, super nice.
Thanks for listening to Does Not Compute on the Spec Network. There's a new show that's just joined the network called Swift Unwrapped. It's hosted by Jesse Squires and JP Simard. They're going to be doing a deep dive on all things Swift, and their first episode is live now at spec.fm, so I'd highly recommend going and giving that a listen. Today's episode of Does Not Compute was sponsored by Rollbar. Rollbar makes monitoring and fixing errors incredibly simple. You can be up and tracking production errors in just a few minutes and easily send notifications and issues to Slack, HipChat, Trello, GitHub, and more. I use Rollbar personally, and they really do make my life easier. Check out rollbar.com/DNC and sign up, and you'll get 1 month free of Rollbar's Bootstrap plan.